Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, March 19th, 2016. This is episode 1271. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Atlassian. Unleash your team's potential with collaborative software tools like HipChat and Jira, which will enable you to work and communicate better together. Visit Atlassian.com to learn more. And by Score Big. Pay less for quality seats to your favorite sporting and music events. Go to scorebig.com, click on the microphone, and enter the promo code TECHGUY to save $20 off your first ticket purchase. And by Unity, the free personal media server. With Unity, you can access and stream and share any media stored on your computers from your mobile devices. For more information and to download Unity for free, visit getunity.com/techguy. That's spelled getounity.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside those areas, why, you could just, use Skype to reach us. 888-827-5536. Toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. We are going to talk today, of course, about the Big Apple event coming up on Monday. We don't know, of course, as I have to say each and every time, we have no idea what Apple is going to be announcing. Well, we except we do. It used to be Apple was very good at keeping all of this top secret. They were, because the threat of firing is a good threat, is a useful threat when it comes to keeping people out of from talking to journalists. You know, if we catch you, you're dead. And by the way, we have lots of ways to catch you. The problem is, of course, that everything Apple sells now is made in China by a variety of suppliers, and well, you can't really. It's pretty hard to track them down. You got 20,000 workers in another country with devices in their hands. How are you going to keep them from taking a picture and sending it to some blog somewhere? So I think a lot of this stuff does leak out. Here's the latest. And I have to say, I think with some confidence, we can be assured that this is what Apple will release on Monday. The new iPhone. They won't call it an iPhone number. They'll just call it the iPhone SE Special Edition. Small emergency, small egg. I don't know. It'll be a small iPhone. 4-inch screen. Kind of like the, iPhone 4. Or is it the 5? Maybe more like the 5. You know, they've gotten bigger and bigger every year for the last few years. People say, I want a smaller phone. I don't like this giant stuff. So Apple, I think, is going to give them something smaller. Something cheaper, although Apple isn't normally aiming at that end of the market, but we expect around $450, which is a good, that's a lot less expensive than iPhone 6S or 6S Plus. The guts, the insides, will be fairly modern too, an iPhone 6, roughly, the rumors say. Not known whether it'll have the 3D touch. I think it has to, because that's going forward. That's something all the iPhones would have. And you kind of want developers to support it, and et cetera, et cetera. So you got to think it's going to have the that 3D touch, where you press a little harder and it goes zzz, and things happen. I don't use it very often. Some people have gotten used to it and use it a lot more. Camera, no, same. No improvement. That's for later. That's for the fall. We'll also see a new iPad. There were no iPad. They didn't update the iPad Air in the fall when they would normally do it. They only released an iPad Mini 4, the new Mini, which I like a lot. It's nice and small. And, of course, remember, they've got this ginormous iPad. Whoa. It's so big it just hit my microphone. My iPad Pro huge thing. And one of the things people really like about the iPad Pro is the pencil that lets you, you know, it's nicely done. It's not like Apple invented the stylus or anything. In fact, remember how Steve Jobs said nobody wants to use a stylus? Well, I guess people do. And so we think the new iPad will be a 10-inch iPad, iPad Air size, but will be more like an iPad Pro. So a little iPad Pro, because it'll have the pencil support and not, ironically, the 3D touch support. And it'll come with a reduced size keyboard case as well. So, you know, I think that might be interesting. The Pro, I like, you know, Apple kind of was saying it's a laptop replacement. It's an iPad, so I don't think it can really do the full duty of a laptop. But, it's useful in a lot of cases where you might want to take a laptop. But the Pro is so big, you might as well just bring a laptop. Now, if they got it down to 10 inches, maybe. A lot of photographers love using the Pro and the Pencil for editing photos and for scanning through their photos. Maybe there's a market for that. I don't know. Graphics designers, cartoonists. So anyway, that's what we think Apple announced. Also, the announcement was in the loop. The invitation said in the loop. Could mean a couple of things, and it usually does. One, it's in the loop. The event is going to be at One Infinite Loop, Apple's headquarters in Cupertino, California. So that's in the loop. So on the face of it, that's probably all it means, except that one of the bands they sell for the Apple Watch is the Milanese Loop. And the rumor also is they'll be doing new bands. Maybe some new loops, like a black loop. Yeah, that would be a pun. Cute. Sorry, it's hard to get excited about watch bands. Don't expect any other watch announcements, I don't think. We'll see. They have new iOS and Apple Watch OSs and new TV OSs. They might release those on Monday, too. Maybe a dark horse candidate would be a new MacBook. I'd like to see that. That's the really thin, light one. Maybe update that, make it a little faster. And expect Tim Cook to spend some time at the beginning, I think, talking about the Apple versus FBI court case. It's really Apple versus Department of Justice, as you all know by now. The Department of Justice has the work phone from one of the bad guys in the San Bernardino killings, the terrorist killings, and hope to unlock it. They can't, and they want Apple's help. Apple has said, you know, of course, we want to help prosecute this crime, but if we were to give you the keys to unlock this phone, a modified firmware, it would be bad for public safety in general because going forward, bad guys would be able to get in. And the FBI says, oh, that's just marketing speak. They don't. Except today, the FBI released a warning that your car could get hacked. You can't have it both ways, you know? I mean, the problem is if there's backdoors in software, if companies can be compelled to write special law enforcement vulnerable software, vulnerable is vulnerable. And so now the FBI, along with the Department of Transportation and the National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration, actually on Thursday, warned drivers about over-the-internet attacks on cars and trucks, vulnerable software. You can't have it both ways. That's a public safety problem. The announcement doesn't reveal that the agency's learned anything about car hacking that isn't already known. You remember the 2020 piece. Bad guys took over a Jeep and drove it off the road. Or was it Dateline? Yeah, one of them. One of them their news shows. Well, this is exactly what Apple's worried about. Now we're also learning that the U.S. government has already been pushing tech firms with secret court orders to hand over the programming code for their firmware, looking for flaws in the firmware they could take advantage of. The cases were filed under seal and also authorized under the FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Service Act courts. This is a whistleblower that's leaked this out. The whistleblower says the tech companies lose these court cases almost all the time. The Justice Department admitted we have demanded source code and private encryption keys before, but they wouldn't say whether they succeeded. I bet they do. Asked whether the Justice Department would demand source code going forward, the spokesperson declined to comment. That's not a denial. You have to understand that what they're looking for is hacks against the source code. And how well protected are these hacks if the government finds them? How well protected is the source code? Well, all I have to do is point to the IRS, which leaked 700,000 at last count tax returns last year by accident. The Office of Personnel Management, which let millions of people's records get away. The government doesn't have a very good track record in this regard. Well, that court case decision comes Tuesday. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, we're 0 for 2 on the Samsung Galaxy S7. I dropped mine, cracked it. I cracked the back, at least. My colleague Jason Howell, who hosts our show all about Android, dropped his S7, not even the Edge version, cracked the front. It's slippery, like a little fishy in your hand. And extremely fragile. I still love this phone. But I guess you want to... Somebody said in the chat room, you should hold it like a wine glass. Because if it drops, it's going to break. Yikes. It might give you pause. If you're a phone destroyer, I am not. Well, I don't think Jason is either. I am very careful. This is the first phone I've broken in many years. Not unwillfully. I've willfully broken phones. Dunking my iPhone in a glass of water probably counts as willful damage. But I haven't cracked a phone. I don't drop them very often. So that's bad news. It's too bad. It's such a great phone. Samsung's made such a great phone. Hello, Heather Hammond, Phone Hello. Ranger. How are you today?
Great. How are you?
You're looking fabulous as always.
You are. I barely recognize you. I'm like, who's this fill-in host?
I know. I left 30 pounds in the lobby.
Who's this imposter?
I saw a picture of you with a famous fella.
Oh, yeah.
Was that exciting? You want to share with the world?
Sure. Steve-O was in town.
The guy from Jackass.
Mm-hmm.
Was he up to no good? Was he up to like a prank? Did he prank you?
No. He's performing at Cobb's.
He's a comic now. Yeah.
And he has a new show on Showtime, I believe.
Oh, really?
That he was plugging.
Oh,
yeah.
Good. I like Steve-O. Blah, blah,
blah. Yeah, he's a really good guy.
Even though he kind of incited my teenage son to do many dangerous things to his body.
That.
Yeah. I'm glad he's survived, however.
I know. Well, he's got some new pranks coming up, and it's like, really? I can't imagine what it's like being his wife, you know?
Oh. He has a wife?
I believe he does. In fact, I said something stupid about her to him.
Oh, whoopsies. I hate it when that happens.
And you embarrass yourself in front of a celebrity.
Yeah, and you know you're never going to get a chance to take that one back.
She seems really lovely, but if anything ever happens, I'm here for you.
Is that what you said?
Something like that.
I wouldn't repeat that.
It was kind of a flirt that went wrong.
Did he look at you askance?
That I thought was funny.
It is funny. It's cute. He probably does. You know, see, he doesn't know you, so he doesn't know that you're just joking. Maybe you're not. I don't know. So you've been answering. Dead silence. You've been answering the phones for us for the last few minutes, and mm-hmm. I see we've got a full board, but I do want to pick the very best person to start with.
Raul in L.A.
Raul.
I like to be big in Japan.
I like Raul. I like saying that name. Hello, Raul.
No, that was pretty good. I like when you roll your R.
Raul.
Most people can't do that.
Raul.
They call me, I get called Ralph.
Ralph. Yeah. Hey, Raul. Raul.
Exactly.
Is that the Spanish or the French pronunciation? I feel like I'm saying it a French style. Raul.
No, that's Spanish.
Is it?
Raul in French is R-A-O-U-L.
Ah, Raul.
I just want to start by saying thanks for your show, because some of us who don't understand technology as to what end to plug into the wall, it really does help.
That's my job here. I like doing it. I get to play with all the toys. I get to break them before you do.
Exactly.
But I also feel like, in all seriousness, technology is important to understand and know. And especially now, I mean, as our jobs disappear to technology, it's a good thing to understand what's coming. And
yeah,
so I think I like to educate people about that too. What can I do to help you?
Okay, so here's my thing. I bought a Note 5, a Samsung Note 5.
Love that. Love that phone.
and I am moving out of the country to Japan. So what I did was I bought an unlocked international version of the phone.
Okay.
And then because they, I was kind of told that if you buy a phone in Japan, the chances are if, when you come back to the States, that phone will not work here.
Yeah, this is, this is the issue. When you buy an unlocked phone, you got to really check to make sure it has the radios for the country you're going, the countries that you want to use it in. And Japan and the U.S. have definitely have some differing things. So did you check before you bought this phone? Just buying an unlocked phone won't necessarily make it so. Samsung, in particular, sells phones, different phones for every region.
Got it. Well, I mean, I looked at it, I checked out the specs, and then I went onto like a chat room where a lot of people had asked if it works in Japan, and everyone said yes, it does work in Japan, not a problem.
Yeah, and work can mean different things. It can mean works, you know, works or works fully. Like a lot of times the high speed.
Yeah, the big thing was, yeah, as soon as you just need to get the SIM card from whatever Japan carrier is going to be providing the service.
Right. You'll have it that way. You'll have a Japanese number and you'll pay Japanese rates for data. You never, ever, ever want to pay overseas roaming rates.
That's exactly why I did it.
Yeah. And there's a good place to go online that you can read up. It's more for travelers than movers. How long are you going to be there?
A year.
Yeah. So in this case, this is not a month-to-month thing. You're going to really got to probably open an account with a company in Japan.
Right.
But it's the prepaid with data wiki. If you Google one word, prepaid with data, the reason that they focused on prepaid, the idea is, oh, I'm a traveler. I'm going to be in London for 3 weeks. What should I get? Well, you get a prepaid SIM from a London carrier. And it'll give you data. But in this case, it'll also give you information on the different carriers in Japan, who has the best prices and which ones will work with that note.
And the ones that work with that specific note.
Yeah, I mean, I think they all should. Again, really, it's more the hardware on the note. But, for instance, Japan still has CDMA carriers as well as GSM carriers. Your phone's probably a GSM phone.
It is a GSM.
Yeah. On the other hand, nowadays, and I'm not sure that it's a changing world right now because there's LTE and most carriers are now, instead of doing CDMA or GSM, are doing LTE. Japan, I think, has more modern LTE than we have here in the States, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It gets complicated.
Okay.
So that's why I don't know the answer, but I would go to prepaid with data. It's like prepaidwithdata.wikia.com. We'll put a link in our show notes. But if you Google prepaid with data, you can find it. And then just look at Japan. And what it is, crowdsourced. So it's like that chat room you were in. But it's more permanent. It's people writing stuff down.
The whole time, right.
Yeah, and so you can really see what experiences people have had there.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, have fun. Are you going to teach English? What are you going to do there?
Yeah, I'm going to teach English.
What fun. I think that's a great idea before you have a family to live in any country, but Japan in particular would be fascinating. What a different
country. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, have a great time.
Great. Thank you so much for
safe travels. My pleasure. Yeah, this is just the general recommendation. Traveling anywhere is never, ever pay for roaming. Roaming is the thing that you got to watch out for. And every phone has a setting that says turn off international data or roaming data. Do that before you leave the country if you're going to take your U.S. phone with you. And then there are ways to get around that, you know. I mean, first of all, Wi-Fi is ubiquitous. So fortunately, you can most of the time just use Wi-Fi. But prepaid with data is good. And if you're going to stay for more than a few months, yeah, I'd actually get a Japanese phone and just say I'm not going to bring it back. It's, you know, I'm going to have the best experience in Japan. That's going to be a year. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru, joins us every week at this time to talk big screen TVs, surround sound. I see that there is an Atmos sound bar out and that the new Blu-ray format, the UHD premium format, supports Atmos. You've been a big supporter of the idea that sound should come above as well as left, right, center, behind, above. That's real surround sound.
Yep.
You think it's worth getting that?
Well, you know, certainly it is. Atmos is well worth it because sounds in the real world as we're walking around come from above.
Yeah.
And so, you know.
And it's more than true in Smurfs 2. I joke because that's one of the few titles that are available in UHD.
On Ultra HD Blu-ray, yeah, that's true. And that particular title is more important for its high dynamic range.
Yeah.
But there are plenty of titles, there will be, and there are certainly
actually, I noticed Sony is putting out something like 20 or 30 titles. There are quite a few.
Yeah, yeah.
Expendables 2, wow.
Well, Concussion also.
Concussion.
It's actually a very good movie. It's the movie with Will Smith about the doctor who kind of discovered the NFL head injury problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's actually a good movie.
Where did I say? I saw a list of the films. It's, you know, but I remember this also when Blu-ray came out in the first place. You know, it was a handful of films, and many of them you didn't really want to see.
Yep, yep, exactly.
Terminator Genesis, you know, it's stuff like that. I bet you they're mostly Sony pictures, I would guess. Because Sony's making it, right?
Sony is, the Ultra HD Blu-ray is a result of a number of companies coming together. Sony Pictures is one of four studios that have released Ultra HD Blu-ray. Lionsgate, Fox, and I think Universal are the others.
I like Lionsgate. That's a good company.
It is.
Some good movies there.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're coming up to this is, as you say, the transition to a new format, a new era of home entertainment, moving from Blu-ray. When it first came out, players were expensive. There were only a few titles. People were kind of going, what? And then now we have plenty. And the same thing's going to happen with Ultra HD Blu-ray. Faster, I think, even. Because, for one thing, the first player comes from Samsung.
Yeah.
It's less than half the price of the first Blu-ray player when it first came out.
It's amazing, isn't it? It was like $500, $400.
$400. Yeah. And the discs aren't that much more than Blu-ray to begin with. I think they're in the $30 range.
Interesting.
You know, which is, you know, it's a lot for a movie, but Blu-rays, I mean, you can get some Blu-rays for a lot less than that, but first run, just released Blu-rays aren't that much less than that, I don't think.
Yeah. Exciting.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Hey, I wanted to let you know, I've just posted something on AVS that I want everybody to know about. We've talked about high-resolution audio many times, right, with the ability to reproduce higher frequencies and greater dynamic range than CDs can do.
Right.
And my two guests on my podcast this week have developed a new set of test files that anyone can download and test basically their own hearing acuity. Whether
so now
or
you
not.
You did this once before.
I did, but this is different.
Okay.
Before, what I did was I posted two versions of the same song that had been recorded at high resolution.
Yeah.
One was the native song in its native resolution, and the other, it was down converted to CD specs.
Yeah.
And I obscured which one was which, and I said, tell me which one was which. These tests are a little different. They are, how high a frequency can you actually hear? And how wide a dynamic range can you actually hear? And it's different for every individual person. So these are almost like do-it-yourself hearing tests. And the question is, can you hear the frequencies that are way up there that the high resolution audio represents?
I can't.
I can't either. None of us in our age group. Wait,
when is I know, you know, you start needing reading glasses when you head into your 40s. Is it about then that you also lose that high end acuity?
You start right around that same age.
In high school, we'll put tones on their phones that text message notices that they call it the mosquito tone that they can hear. In fact, it's kind of painful, but that the teacher can't. And
the teacher can't hear.
The teacher may not even be that old. So I really think it goes the super high end acuity goes away pretty fast.
It does, and I really hope that people download these and test them out for themselves. They answer the question, when it comes to high-resolution audio, can you hear those frequencies and that dynamic range that's encoded in the high-resolution audio? Most of us in this hobby, somebody wrote a comment I thought was so great. How ironic that when you're young and can hear this stuff, all you can afford are cheap MP3s.
Yeah.
When you're older and can afford high-resolution audio and a nice audio system and so on, you can't hear the frequencies anyway.
Yeah, it's sad, isn't it?
It's very sad.
Yeah, and it's the same thing with sports cars and, and you know, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Youth is wasted on the young,
If the young only knew, if the old only could. It's all...
Indeed.
It's all just life. Yeah. Life. Isn't it ironic, as Alanis Morissette might... Now, I know you chose he chose a Linda Ronstadt song.
He did.
Which is a great song, but it was recorded in on analog tape, which surprises me that he used that.
Well, I think he took it actually from the CD.
Yeah, but so that's even weirder because the CD's 44/116.
Correct. However, that particular test was only for dynamic range, and what he did was he imported it into an editing program called Audacity, and extended the bit length of each word, of each digital word in the file, to 24 bits so that he could manipulate the volume or the level of the file more accurately. And so these tests, that particular test, it doesn't matter. The frequency response doesn't matter. All that matters is the dynamic range.
So he's not testing frequency. He's testing
the
loudest and the quietest.
Correct. Yeah. That you can perceive.
You know what's so funny? I was talking about the Galaxy S7, and Samsung's done this for a couple of years. I think the S6 and the Note 4 and 5 had it. They have an adapt sound feature buried deep within the sounds where you do a sound test. You plug in the headphones that you want to use, and they do a sound test, much like the audiologist would do, where, can you hear this?
Yeah.
Can you hear this? Can you hear this? They do it for left and right ear. They make a curve, which looked very much like the one the audiologist gave me when I did that sound test. And they said, would you like to apply that equalization anytime you use headphones on our phone?
Wow, that's pretty cool.
And it makes an audible difference. I mean, it's, as you get older and your hearing gets worse, it's just an EQ curve.
Right, but so they boost the frequencies that you're deficient in, in other words.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a nice thing in a phone. That's, to me, that's one of the, I wish Apple would do
really
that.
Really nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that test is dynamic range, and there's two other tests for high frequency range. What's the highest frequency you can hear?
Nice. So these are free. You go to avsforum.com.
Avsforum.com,
and you can download them, and you can see how good or bad. But it's also useful if you're thinking of spending extra money to upgrade your stereo system to high dynamic range or whatever it is they call it, high res.
High resolution, yeah.
And that can be expensive. This might be something to do before you do that and buy all new music. I did. Scott Wilkinson, AVS Forum, and Home Theater Geeks. Thank you, Scott. We'll talk next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I see. Yeah. So I love that Linda Ronstadt. And I guess because it's a full orchestra, it probably has some very quiet and very loud.
Well, actually, what he does is he only does a 20-second clip.
Yeah.
And he plays it at full volume. And part of the editing process was he normalized the file so that the peaks were as high as could be without clipping. So he plays it at full volume. Then he reduces it by, say, 5 dB and plays it again and then brings it back at full volume. And you play through that sequence, and each time the middle sample gets reduced by another 5 dB. So it goes down 5 dB, 10 dB, 15, 20, 30, 25, 30, all the way down to 90 dB down.
And so far he says no one has been able to go below 85.
That's right.
Yeah. Of course, he points out that 90 dB is the sound floor of most players, right?
Yep, exactly. And that's part of the problem.
So hiss or whatever the noise level...
the noise floor of the analog stage.
Starts to meet the sound that's coming to you.
Yep. Yep.
That's pretty low level. Wow.
So what you said before was exactly right. If you're going to spend the kind of money you need to be able to reproduce a lower sound floor, equipment that has a lower sound floor, that's going to be very expensive because it's in the analog electronics, and high quality analog electronics are always expensive. High quality digital electronics can be cheap. Once you develop a chip, you print out a million of them and they cost practically nothing. But high quality analog electronics, always expensive. So if you're going to spend that kind of money, can you hear beyond 85 dB to begin with? And the answer is most people can't. And can you hear beyond 20 kilohertz? And he demonstrated at the AES show, right? Audio Engineering Society, a bunch of audio professionals who are admittedly probably median age well over 30. You know, can they hear above 20 kilohertz frequencies? The answer is no. And the test that he devised for that was the recording of a chime, a set of chimes, which has a lot of very high frequency information up to like 30 kilohertz. And he did the same thing. You play the thing full bandwidth and then you play it band limited and continue to increase the high pass filter in one case until you can't hear it anymore. And at what high pass filter cutoff setting could you not hear it anymore? And no one got beyond 20 kilohertz. It goes to 30 kilohertz. So really what this proves is that you can't really hear frequencies above 20K. Most people can't. I hope some really young people take this test because I would love to see what they come up with, you know, teenagers or even preteens. But anyway, most of us can't hear beyond 20 kilohertz. Most of us can't hear dynamic range beyond 85 dB, which is entirely what's represented on a CD. So why get high resolution audio? Well, the next step in their testing, which they're working on now, is finding out other artifacts, what are called in-band artifacts, which depend upon the type of filters that are used when you're recording and digitizing, and then when you're converting from digital back to analog. And if those filters muck up the sound, then you will hear that. And if they don't, or if they do something else, then you might say, oh, that sounds better. Because you'll remember the test that I conducted a couple years ago, people who had high-resolution audio-capable systems picked the high-resolution audio track like 80% of the time correctly, whereas people who didn't have high-res-capable systems picked it only 50% of the time. So this is just another data point, shall we say, or set of data points in the quest to understand high dynamic range.
Thanks, Scott. We'll be back at the top of the hour. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo. My website is techguylabs.com. You don't have to write anything down. Whatever you hear on the air here, we will jot down and put on the website. And so you can refer to the website, and that's free and open. There's no sign up. I don't want your email address. You can keep it to yourself. What would I do with it anyway? Actually, it's going to be a little later today that we'll get the notes up because James DeRuvo, who writes those notes down, I think he said, I'm going to a conference. My guess is it's Silicon Valley Comic Con. Be my guess. A conference where you dress up as your favorite superhero. But I might be wrong. I could be wrong, James. If I've slimed you, I apologize. That's not slime. That's where I'd be if I weren't here. Steve Wozniak, the founder of Apple, has put up a bunch of money and has a Comic-Con going on right now in Silicon Valley.
I have a girlfriend there dressed as Vulcan Vanna White, among others.
So she's got pointy ears and a gown.
I believe so.
Yeah. What would you go if you were going to a Comic-Con? What costume?
Oh, I'd let you pick.
Poison Ivy?
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. I do not dress up as comic book heroes. Well, wait a minute. I was going to be Paul Blart Mall Cop. Does that count? I have the segue, see? They call it cosplay, short for costume play. And it's always struck me as odd to be. I'll be frank. Can I be? Let's be frank. It's a little odd. But you know what? I'm old. That's why. I'm just old. I don't appreciate the kids today. or the adults who think they're kids. Dan in Newport Beach, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well.
I like you better as Leo than Frank.
You like me better as what?
Leo than Frank. You said let's be Frank.
Let's be Frank. I could be Frank Sinatra. That I could dress up. Hey.
at any rate, I was thinking about you the other day. I listen to you every week. I was listening to Sports Talk during the week, and they were talking about VPN.
Yes. They were talking about VPN?
Yeah. What it was is some guy was on there who's a producer.
Yeah.
And I was surprised he was even talking about it, but he was saying how he doesn't have any channels. Any cable, nothing. He just does it all through VPN on his computer.
Oh, yeah, because he wants to what they call bypassed geographical restrictions.
Right. And I wasn't so concerned with that. It was more, they were talking about the security as well.
Yeah, that's a different issue. It's so funny. I think it still happens on, you know, kind of mainstream media. Remember the ad that BMW is running of Katie Couric? And Bryant Gumbel from the Today Show 20 years ago and saying, what is internet? And then asking the young producer, Sally, what is this internet? but it still happens. It's so funny. So what is, Tommy, what is this VPN you've been telling us about? stands for Virtual Private Network. And people first encountered it when they were logging into their workplace computer network from home. For obvious reasons, you know, if you have a business network, you don't want anybody, just any Tom, Dick, or Frank to, log in and use your business resources. So you have a password that people enter. Sometimes they have to run often they have to run special software on their end. And now it's as if they're at work. They're using the corporate VPN. Now, it's more than just a password. You may not see this, but in order to protect the data as it, because when you traverse the public internet, normally anybody can see all the stuff, all the bits. So what it does is it puts all the data inside an encrypted tunnel. And and that way, even if I could see your data, let's say I'm your internet service provider or I'm a guy in a coffee shop running some, specialized software, I can't see, all I see is gobbledygook because it's encrypted. There's an encrypted tunnel. So that's what a VPN is. Now it has, and as you point out, it has a security benefit. If you're in a coffee shop or any open Wi-Fi, it probably is a good idea to use a VPN. And I'll explain how you can do that. But it has this secondary benefit, which is you don't emerge onto the public internet until you reach whoever's providing the VPN service. If it's your business, then it looks like you're surfing the net from work. If it's a server in England, it looks like you're surfing the net in England. And so that's people use that to watch programming that is geographically restricted. The BBC very famously's iPlayer, which everybody wants to use because it allows you to watch BBC programming, can't be used outside of England because British citizens pay for it with their license fees. And now, actually, BBC's working. I think they're on an iPlayer that'll work in the U.S., which will be nice. But a lot of people get around it using VPNs. That is of dubious legality and morality and ethics. But
sure.
A lot of people do it, including that producer, apparently. But for security...
Is there any cons about it?
There is a con because it's a little slower. And you have to run specialized software. Now, most modern operating systems, except for mobile operating systems, but all desktop operating systems have VPN capabilities. So you usually don't have to use specialized software. More and more, you're seeing smartphones with this. The other con is you have to pay for or find a VPN service. Some people run their own VPN service out of their house. That won't give you the geographic benefit, but it will give you the secure benefit, or at least some security. See, remember, at some point, you have to be in the public because you can't VPN. Let's say I want to, visit Playboy.com and I don't want anybody to know what I'm doing. You'd have to negotiate an encrypted channel to Playboy to keep it completely private. So usually what would happen then is you would surf over an encrypted channel to a VPN and then emerge into the public. And at that point, anybody watching your traffic at that end could see where you were going. But the point is to prevent somebody on a shared network like a coffee shop or a hotel or a cruise ship from observing. Now, obviously, it's not so much for avoiding people knowing you're going to Playboy, especially since they took the nude pictures off. Who cares? But it might be if you don't want people to watch your email and things like that. The good news is now most services, and more, thanks to pressure from Google, are moving to encryption, HTTPS. So, for instance, no one can observe your traffic with Amazon or Facebook unless you explicitly turn off a secure channel. It's encrypted from you through the coffee shop, through the public internet, all the way to the Facebook. It's like that pre-negotiated, okay, we're going to encrypt together deal. So no one, it's not on the public internet. It's encrypted. And you should always use an email provider that does, that's called end-to-end encryption or SSL or HTTPS. Those are all names for roughly the same thing, which is an encrypted channel. And for email especially, you don't want people to observe your email. There's a story that came out a couple of weeks ago. A writer was filing stories from an airplane. He was on one of the I can't remember if it was Boingo or GoGo, but he's one of the airplane Wi-Fis. And as he's getting off the plane, the guy behind him taps his shoulder and says, "Hey, I really enjoyed that story you're writing." "What? Well, you were emailing, and I could see everything you were doing." That was a revelation. So that's a case where you might want to use a VPN. But, again, the negatives. One, it's a little bit slower because you're going through an additional server. Not much, usually. Two, it probably will cost you money, or at least the trouble to set it up. In most cases, you're going to pay for VPN service, and there are lots of people who offer it. I've recommended in the past, and I do love this solution, something called a tiny hardware firewall. And I carry it around with me all the time. It's one of the reasons I started carrying a man bag, so I can carry this around with me. It's not very big, but the idea is, you connect to the open Wi-Fi access point with this tiny hardware firewall, and then it automatically puts you on a VPN. So everything you're doing is now private up to the VPN server. You pay for this, but you get a year of VPN service with it. The one I got from tinyhardwarefirewall.com gives you a year of service from Hotspot VPN, which is one of a number of commercial providers. And it works great. It actually has an additional privacy feature. It also, if you want, you can turn on Tor. A couple of weeks ago, we went on vacation. I was at a hotel. First thing I do is I fire up my tiny hardware VPN. I get on the hotel's public Wi-Fi. I log in so that I have a connection. This is now the access point, this tiny hardware firewall. And all of the phones, the laptops, everything in the room, up to five devices, instead of going on the hotel's Wi-Fi, goes on the tiny hardware firewall Wi-Fi. And then everything we do is now private and encrypted. That's a really great solution. And it works quite well. Tinyhardwarefirewall.com. That's certainly one way to do a VPN very efficiently, very easily. Leo Laporte, good question. And I hope the sports producer got that all right. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's why we do this show. I carry with this a battery pack. This is one of those, you know, little phone battery packs. This thing doesn't use a lot of juice, so it's pretty easy to use. But you could also plug this into the USB port of a laptop or whatever. The nice thing about the battery pack is then I can put it back in my bag or my pocket, and this thing will continue to run. So the first thing you do is on the laptop or the phone, you get on the Wi-Fi network created by this, and you have it join the Wi-Fi network at the hotel or the cruise ship. It's booting up right now. It's going to take a little time to boot up. That's another negative. It takes you a little bit to do this. That's one reason why you might want to keep it on a battery all the time. Yeah. So I go onto my phone. Works with any Wi-Fi device. And I look at my Wi-Fi. And I'll see in a minute the access point that is specifically this device. Once I see that, I can log into this device through a browser and configure it to get on the open hotspot. Thank you, Michael. You're really great. Thank you so much. Good job. These are my two favorites. Thanks. So I'm still waiting for this to boot up, but as soon as it does, I can join this. And, of course, because I've joined it before, I'll already have the password, so I don't have to re-enter the password or anything. And then once I've configured this for the local Wi-Fi, this is now an access point that anything can use. So our laptop joins this instead of the hotel Wi-Fi, and our phones join it, up to 5 devices. Now, they're all surfing through this, and this is a VPN that goes through the hotspot VPN service. You can also do this, you know, just using another VPN service. And there are less expensive VPN services, but this includes the hardware, which I like. Still waiting for it to boot up. You can see it's a slow boot up process.
So, yeah, we've been talking in the chat room about UHD Blu-ray. Dr. Mack asked if there was going to be UHD Blu-ray computer drives. I don't know of any yet. I imagine that will happen at some point, but don't know of any yet. Beatmaster was asking about 2 HDMI outputs from Ultra HD Blu-ray players, and that's really important. I'm pretty sure the Samsung has that. It's the only one out on the market now. Any company that doesn't do that, I think, is making a mistake, primarily because that allows you to separate the audio from the video. And that's important because they used to do that with 3D, because sometimes an AVR would not be able to pass 3D through it. Well, now AVRs can do that, but they can't necessarily pass high dynamic range content through them. So what you might have to do if you have a high dynamic range TV and an Ultra HD Blu-ray player and an AV receiver that doesn't pass high dynamic range, you have to connect one HDMI cable from the player to the TV directly, and then the other one from the player to the AVR so we can get the audio. So I think that's a good idea. Manufacturers should definitely be doing that. The Gem Doctor rightfully wished me a happy vernal equinox, and I wish that to all of you there as well, because this is the time of year when the night and day are the same length and sun's crossing the equator, and pretty soon we're going to have longer days than nights, in fact, starting now. So I think that's kind of cool. good question, Web Hunk. What size does 4K become noticeable over 1080p in terms of screen size? Depends on your seating distance. The seating distance, in order to get the maximum resolution benefit, detail benefit out of 1080p, is 3 times the screen height. The maximum, the distance at which you can get the most resolution detail benefit out of UHD is 1.5 times the screen height. So twice is basically you're sitting twice as close to the screen of a given size in order to get that benefit. If you sit the same distance away as HD, you're not going to get as much benefit. Some people do claim that they can see clearly a difference in resolution. And if so, good on you. Great. Glad to hear it. Theoretically speaking, it's not likely to be much of a difference. Let's see here. Oh, what do you know? Wilbert says the Consumer Reports thinks UHD Blu-ray computer drives will come out during the holidays. So all you have is about a year to wait, a little less. Yes, Twisted Mister, you could use a third-party, an external HDMI switch, really a splitter with multiple outputs. Exactly, a splitter. And here we go. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Scott. Sorry to eat into your time there.
Hey, no problemo.
Me and my dumb demos. All right, have a great week.
You too. See you next week.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, VPNs, smartphones. Yes, VPNs, smartphones, smartwatches. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can use Skype out if you want to call from anywhere else in the world. We get callers from all over the world thanks to that amazing thing called the internet. Let's go to West L.A. Richard is next on the line. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Question about a 6 or 7 year old Mac, which a friend has, and she's not terribly technologically advanced, shall we say?
Okay.
She's noticed certain pages load slowly, more slowly than before. She thinks she has about 4 gigabytes of RAM in that was a native machine.
Sounds about
machine.
Right, yeah. Question and that's enough, by the way.
Say again?
That's enough.
That's enough. Okay. Question is the slowness due to the fact that the machine is just getting old?
Could be. It also could be the internet's getting fat.
Right.
It might be a little bit of both. So one way to test that is to start over with the machine. One of the things, probably the number one cause for slowdown on PCs, believe it or not, is a hard drive that is getting less reliable. So the PC often is laboring to load data in it. And here's how it would affect browsing. You'd think, well, why would that affect browsing? The browser's loaded. It's getting the data from the internet, not the hard drive. But if it's caching data, then it might actually slow it down if it tries to load the cached data. What I would do is, which browser is she using? Safari?
I think so. To be honest, I don't know.
And is she keeping her machine up to date? Is she patching it whenever there are updates?
She's just getting the latest Apple download, the Mac downloads.
But she hasn't. Has she updated the operating system or not?
She has. They come out every so often, don't they?
Yeah, every year, as a matter of fact.
Okay. Well, I don't think she's gotten the most recent one because some genius suggested to her that it really wouldn't matter in her machine.
It might be it's old enough that she doesn't want to go to the captain. El Capitan.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, if the genius says so, although my experience with the geniuses is they're of mixed IQ. Some of them are pretty smart.
Yeah.
Should be. They're well-trained. Apple gives them specialized training. Most of them come to Cupertino for it. But a lot of times, you know what happens with geeks is they don't like to say, I don't know. Sometimes they'll make up an answer.
Right.
Then sometimes that answer is completely wrong.
Yes.
So, you know, I'd have to know the model. But usually, if the Apple genius says no, you probably shouldn't upgrade to the latest, then that's probably the case. Apple wants you to upgrade if you can.
Right.
So then the suspect may be the hard drive. But one thing she could do is go into Safari and reset it, clear out the cache. Clear out the temp files, because if it's a slow hard drive, that could actually be slowing it down. Let me just real quickly give you the instructions for resetting Safari. I'm not sure how to do it. I haven't done it in a while. In the history menu, there's a clear history and website data item. So that is, I would clear all the history in the cache. Now, that might mean that it doesn't remember what page she was on. She might have to, you know, re-enter. It doesn't clear cookies, but she might have to re-enter data occasionally or log back in. So to prepare her for that.
Yeah.
But that might help things.
Okay. I'll let her know.
Yeah. And if not, then the next step is to reinstall the entire thing. Wipe the hard drive. And, you know, the other thing, every Mac... This may be voodoo and it may not be, but it's certainly something Apple encourages. There's a utility in the utilities folder, the applications folder, called Disk Utility. And you can verify the hard drive with it. Depending on the version of the operating system, it might say, fix the hard drive. They've taken that out of later versions of the operating system.
Right.
But you might, and now they call it first aid. Run first aid on the hard drive. That checks for errors. Weirdnesses that happen over time, and it's not unusual. If your Mac's behaving strangely, it's not a bad idea to do that.
Right. Okay, well, I'll let her know, and I thank you very much.
You're very welcome. I hope some of that helps. It may be time for reinstalling everything. It might be even time for a new hard drive. The good news is on older Macs, it's a very easy thing to upgrade the hard drive. Dave is in Crystal Lake, Illinois. Hi, Dave. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Great. Hey, keep on getting the invites for Windows 10.
Yeah, that's not going away for a while.
Yeah.
Thank you, Microsoft.
You were talking last week about some people having their things just
automatically upgraded, yeah.
Well, I got a window that said, you will be changed on such and such a date.
Right.
And so and then they give you a couple options to schedule another date or just cancel it, which I canceled. But if you just click on it and don't look at it, it's going to change it for you.
Microsoft last month moved the Windows 10 update for Windows 7 and 8.1. Free update, but you know some people don't want to change. Moved that into the recommended updates, and by default, those will be installed automatically.
Yeah. So anyways, I've got a RAID 1 set up on my Windows 7, and I'm afraid that if I were to try to upgrade to 10, that might not convert over well, and then I get...
No. The RAID is handled by your BIOS, not the operating system, and it's transparent to the operating system. As far as Windows knows, you just got a one big hard drive.
Oh, okay. So
of course, back up. Always back up before you do it. But, yeah, no, the RAID is below the operating system. It's handled by the BIOS.
Okay.
Yeah, all so right. It's safe. It just looks like a drive. Doesn't look like anything special. Now watch, it's going to crash, and you're going to blame me. So that's why I said back up, just in case. Just in case. I have had many, since last week, many people write and say, no, I was upgraded to Windows 10 without my knowledge overnight. I didn't approve it. It just happened. And Microsoft's saying that's not a bug. They do give you have to agree to the end user license, the EULA, but by that time it's too late. It is already installed. So if you don't agree, it has to uninstall Windows 10. This is not okay. Very unhappy with Microsoft over this. This is, frankly, unacceptable behavior, in my opinion. It's shocking. So beware, you know, if you don't want Windows 10, you're going to have to take some steps to avoid it. We'll talk about that when we come back. Yeah, really, really unacceptable. Are you a programmer? I probably shouldn't have to tell you about a company called Atlassian. If you're on a team of any kind and productivity is important to you, Atlassian has the solutions we use that you will use. I first became aware of Atlassian when we were developing the new website. The team in Austin used Jira, which is amazing. It's a dashboard that helps teams work on projects effectively. There's never any guesswork. It's just everybody loves Atlassian. ATLAS, like Atlas. SIAN. Atlassian makes four products you're going to want to know about. Jira allows you to assign, track, and manage tasks for any project, no matter how complex. It's amazing. We also use Confluence here, which is a way to organize work, create documents, discuss everything in one place. Our IT team uses Confluence also for reporting issues and help tickets. And we also use HipChat. I love our HipChat. HipChat is a kind of a chat that has so much more. For instance, we've tied it into Panopto, so we know when servers are down. I get a message from HipChat. I can confer with producers and engineers. We use it all over the organization. You can even use it to video chat. And then there's Bitbucket. That allows you to test, review, and manage code in real time. I bet you anything that our programmers use it. Atlassian, they're helping teams in every industry, from startup to enterprise, make great ideas real. So how do you bring everyone together to build what's next with Atlassian? Go to Atlassian.com to learn more. See how Jira, Confluence, HipChat, and Bitbucket can give your team everything you need to organize, discuss, and complete shared work. We use this, and if you don't use it, you really ought to take a look. I love it. Atlassian.com. Unleash the potential in your team. Build what's next. Because when Twitch went down this morning, Panopto told me it was it's linked into the Atlassian. It's so cool. Wow. Haven't heard that in a while. Shake a tail feather. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones to Mansfield, Ohio. David's on the line. Hi, David. Leo Laporte.
How are you, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
Real good. Hey, I had a question about DSL modems.
Okay.
I got mine through my service provider.
Typically, that's the case, yeah.
And it's an Action Tech.
Yep.
And
are you on Verizon?
No, CenturyLink.
Okay. Verizon also uses Action Tech. Very
cool. Okay.
Yep.
But anyways, they used to provide me with a two-wire, and that was a great working unit. And it quit, and then they had sent me an Action Tech. And it just doesn't seem to work very well.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Action Tech.
I was just kind of wondering, is there something better out there that I might buy?
The question is, will they let you? So
okay.
You actually, the call needs to be to your DSL provider. Can I use my own modem?
Okay.
And almost certainly they'll say yes. And then you'll say, okay, which ones do you recommend? This is true for cable as well. And usually you want to do this because you're paying a rental fee for that junky modem that they give you. It'd be nice to use your own.
I want something that works better.
Yeah, in both cable and DSL, it's standard. I mean, so they shouldn't prevent you from doing that, but you got to make sure that they allow it.
Okay.
Yeah. So I would ask them. You can get two-wire. There's lots of companies that make DSL modems. I actually don't use DSL lately. I haven't used it in a while. We use it here. I'm not sure what we use, but let me go to the wire cutter because they have – I've referred to them before for my cable modem suggestions. Let me see if they also do DSL modems. A lot of people let's see. The best DSL modem do they have? They have the best cable modem. I don't see a router. Many routers DSL modems will also have a router built in. That's a really strong reason to get your own because, frankly, there's a big variety in quality with the Wi-Fi routers. Does yours have Wi-Fi built in?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Another really good reason. I don't see reviews here. That's interesting. Like me, maybe they stopped using DSL modems. Netgear makes them. I've always had good results from Netgear. ActionTech, you know, one of the reasons I have a bad sense for ActionTech is they're so widely used by, Verizon and other providers. But I would take a look at but again, you have to get their permission and their recommendation. Zycel is a very good company, Zyxel. They're also used by providers, but they'll be more expensive, but they make excellent gear. The Zycel routers and modems are very, very good. They actually, that company comes from the day when we used actual modems. They went,
oh, okay.
So, I don't, you know, do you get TV? Does CenturyLink also do TV over this?
No.
Okay,
no, I don't
good.
Get TV on.
That's when you would have problems. That's when they would say, no, you have to use our proprietary. Like if you're using UVerse, you're going to have to use a UVerse modem.
Okay.
But if you're just getting data over it, they should let you. Good luck getting through to service.
Yeah.
Always fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
You'll also need, one of the reasons you have to talk to them is there's a login and a password for that, which you may not know because it's built into the modem.
Okay. Well, I can log into the modem.
Yeah. The modem has to log into the gateway router, usually on DSL. So you have a DSL login that's specific to the modem, and you may need to have that information as well.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. So just give them a call.
Say, what do you can I buy my own modem, and B, what do you recommend?
Okay.
And then I need that page, that one sheet, to set up your DSL modem, because that will have the login and the password.
Okay. Alrighty.
All right. Just like any modem, a cable modem, DSL modem, they don't do exactly the same things that the old school 56K 300 baud modems did. Those were literally modulator and demodulators. They took data, turned it into sound. And then vice versa. These modems are designed to take our data, but over RF, and turn them into bits over Ethernet. So it's not a complicated thing, but you're right, especially if you're using it for Wi-Fi. If they won't let you, continue to use the ActionTech as a DSL modem, disable the wireless, and then just use it as an Ethernet connection to your own Wi-Fi access point. There's so many better ones. I use an Asus that I love a lot, the C3200. Recommend that. But there are lots of really much better modems with better, Wi-Fi modems with better range and more settings, more capabilities. Things like quality of service that are very handy. Joe's on the line from Laguna Niguel. Hello, Joe. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. Hey, I listen to your show almost every weekend as I'm riding around doing chores or home. I told the lady in the beginning, I was the vice president and general manager of IBM Mobile Group when we launched ThinkPad.
What? Oh, man, thank you. That was a great brand and great laptops, the best.
Yeah, and I didn't invent the brand. It was done before me, but I got moved over to that. And I always get a kick out of when people call you and talk about old products. And a product that was launched under me was the biggest first-day order sales in the history of IBM, and it was the Butterfly. If you remember.
Oh, I remember the Butterfly. That was wild.
It was wild, and, well, it was too late and too expensive. But it was the biggest first-day orders. We won the Best of Comdex. We were on the cover of even Mechanics Illustrated for the craziest gadget of the year.
That was the one where the keyboard would open up as you opened up the laptop, right?
The cover, the keyboard expanded, and our concept, our theory was for marketing is that, you know, people don't like the small, remember we used to call them sub-notebooks?
Yeah.
That was the kiss of death.
Yeah, and that's why you didn't want one, because you couldn't type on it, so this way you get a full screen, a full-size keyboard with your little laptop.
And the first time the guy from the research center came up with a wooden model, he opened it up and all of our eyes fell out of our head. We saw dollars forever, right? But it was late. It was when I got there and took over, it was late. And it was unfortunately like a, I forget the number now, like a 386 or something like
that.
Yeah,
well, this was back in the 90s. I mean, we're talking Windows 95, right?
90, 91 in that time frame. Yeah. I ran the mobile group for 3 years. Then I was the head of operations. But right after we announced it, we were selling a lot. And then Toshiba came out with a bigger chip, a hotter chip, and I couldn't cool the damn thing because any metal that I would have grabbed onto was moving.
There was no way to. Isn't that interesting?
There was no follow-on, and but the advertising was unbelievable. The marketing was great, and I forgot the price. They were probably, I mean, 30,
oh, there were thousands, I'm sure.
$3,100
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah.
And at the beginning, we couldn't make enough. And then at the end, we start, you know, lowering the price lower and lower and lower below the cost. And, of course, the chairman wasn't very happy with me over that. But
well, the ThinkPad line, though, continued on for a long time. Lenovo bought it. They kept the name for, I think they still use the name, but they haven't quite kept the quality up like IBM.
Yeah, they had it on a
those are, hey, hold on a second, Joe. I got to run. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sorry, Joe, when the clock calls, I have to run.
That's okay.
it's great memory, though. Wow. When did you retire?
I'm not retired. I left IBM in 96. I've run some companies. You'll remember, I couldn't go to a competitor. I was the CEO of Hayes Modem.
Oh, my God. We were just talking about modems.
I was listening to.
The AT command set. Yeah, Hayes was the best.
I got hired by the investors to pull it out of the doldrums, and it lasted 2 more years.
Yeah.
Sold it off, but he was the father of the modem. You know, he's the Hayes,
you bet.
The Alphabet. You paid. You know, he had the patents on that.
ATGT.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, yeah. And we did the first DSL with the big phone company in Europe. But the founder of Hayes wouldn't go away, and he kind of screwed that deal up. But it was an interesting time. I ran Toshiba for 3 years.
Wow.
After IBM, and I'm the guy that did the transfer of Gateway to e-machines.
No kidding.
Yeah, so I got a lot of history. But
wow,
Joe.
That's neat.
I really like listening to you. And all I'll give you, my last history thing, I remember back in the 70s, late 70s, I was the plant manager, assistant plant manager of IBM Poughkeepsie mainframe.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We
System
had
370.
Somebody outside who told us that someday somebody's going to be able to put these computers on their desk when we can get the transistors.
No. Never happened.
He walked out of there saying, including me, why would anybody want a computer on their desk when you can have a mainframe and a terminal? And that was our fourth.
Why wouldn't you want that? And now we're going back, aren't we?
Now, not only are we going, the mainframes are booming because of the cloud and all that stuff. But I'm lost. I have the original ThinkPad. I'm the original Butterfly in my garage. And I'm lost.
That's...
when I turn it on, I have to ask my daughter how to do things.
That's history. That is history. Wow.
Joe, I know you're busy, but
thrilled to meet you. And you know, the second part of our conversation is on the podcast. You know, we're still recording, so
okay.
Grab the podcast so you can hear the whole thing.
You do a great job, especially when people call in and talk about old parts they have, want to know how much money they're worth.
Well, I'm an old guy.
I'm probably a little older than you.
I remember those days. I remember those days.
Congratulations on a great show.
Thanks, Joe. It's so great to meet you.
We'll see you.
Take care. Bye bye. Isn't that great? How fun is that? You never know who's going to be listening to this show. Johnny Jett is here. He's actually I'm very jealous, on a boat on the Rhine right now. Hi, Johnny.
That's right. Hello. I'm in Mainz, Germany.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been to Mainz. So you're on the brand new, this is only the second voyage of the Vantage River Voyager riverboat. Beautiful, beautiful boat. I'm looking at it online.
Yeah, it's a great ship. And you know what? The good thing about river cruising has exploded so much that it's made it affordable for everybody. It used to be $5,000 a person. Now you can get on ships. They're having deals all the time. On these guys' website, it says $212 a night.
Oh, that's a good deal.
And that's on their website. That means you can even get a better deal going through a travel agent.
You know, I like river cruising because after hearing about the horrific ocean cruise that the Anthem of the Seas had a couple of months after we were on it, you never have to worry about getting seasick on a river or storms or anything. And when you dock, you're in town. You're there.
Yeah, I'm here. If it wasn't dark, I'd show you. We're in the center of town right now.
Yeah, it's so cool. I love it. I mean, it's limited in the sense that you have to be it has to go somewhere that's on a river. But there are rivers everywhere.
It's not for everyone. There's not a lot of entertainment, but it's a nice,
very relaxing
way to travel.
It's very relaxing.
And, you know, we're seeing four countries in, you know, 4 days, basically.
Isn't it fun? Oh, yeah, so, you brought Natalie. That's
anyway,
nice of you.
For sure.
Yeah.
She's at dinner right now.
Good. Oh, well, we'll let you go to dinner in a second. Yeah, let's get your app of the week.
It's called Groupie. So Groupie. And it's actually perfect if you're traveling with a group of people on a river cruise or wherever you're traveling to. So, you know, everyone's always like, you know, they take a picture like, oh, please send it to me. And you got to take the time to either text it or to email it. Or at the end of the night, you got to do it all. This, if you can create an album and everyone in your group can share it. And it's free. It's on iOS and Android. And whatever photos you guys take as a group, it just goes into this file. So you got to make sure. The only downside is you got to make sure you don't take anything risque when you get drunk late at night. It's going to get you.
Have I shown you my tattoo?
Yeah.
How fun is this? Have you got everybody on the boat doing it?
Not yet.
I want to do it because, you know, when last time we were on a river cruise, I saw everybody taking pictures, and I thought I would love to get all of those pictures because there's pictures of me, you know, just as I have pictures of them. It'd be wonderful to have that. So this is this free?
Exactly. It's free. Yep. iOS and Android.
Groupie.
I'll let you finish.
P-I-E. .co if you want to see the website. Groupie.co. And they have links there.
Yep.
Nice.
And then I got a website for you called Packing Essentials.
Oh, I need this.
So P-A-C-K-I-N-G and then E-S-S-E-N-T-I-A-L-S.com. I'll tweet these out, by the way, since they're long handles and stuff. But you should be a pro packer by now. But for people who don't travel all the time, this is a website that will help you out because it tells you everything what you need.
I
so
need this.
It has four different tabs from preparations and documents, you know, so you won't forget to take the garbage out or to bring your meds. And then it also tells you, you know, what kind of clothing and footwear,
this is
you know,
great.
Entertainment.
And this is and just a free snacks. Website. This is not, you know, that's nice.
It's a free website, and you can just, you know, you can add stuff. You can print stuff for free. You can – the only time you have to register is if you decide to save your list for, you know, for your next trip or whatever. But you can put in where you're going, and it has suggestions. So it's a great site for people who don't know how to pack or who aren't used to packing or traveling. You know, if you travel all the time – usually, you know, we have it down pat. Knock on wood, I haven't forgotten anything. And by chance you do forget something, usually there's always a store nearby unless you're going to the jungle or, you know, on a safari.
And wait a minute. It says it's going to snow in New York on Tuesday. Oh, boy. I'm glad I did this. I didn't expect – they had warm weather moments ago. Okay. This is good.
Is that true?
Well, it's what it said.
Is it going to snow?
Yeah. I don't know. I'll have to check. I'm glad I checked packingessentials.com. Bring a snowsuit. Wow.
Yeah, you know, you always got to check the 10-day weather forecast before you go.
Right.
I'm looking at it right now. I do not see snow.
Okay. Whew. All right. That's a relief.
Actually, I don't see snow.
Rain.
So I don't know what they're talking.
Rain. It'll be chilly.
34 tomorrow is going to be low. So that's the closest it's going to be.
Oh, man.
So you don't have to worry about snow.
Oh, good. Thank goodness.
But I do have one more tip for you. I know I always give you a tip of the week.
Yeah.
So when you're choosing flights, I always like to fly, you know, a wide body plane. So, you know, a lot of times I'll fly LA to Miami, and American Airlines, they have like four different types of planes flying this route. An A321, which is single aisle, the 737, same thing, 757, but they also have a couple 777s. And, you know, especially if you're trying to get upgraded, if you have elite status, you always pick the bigger plane that has a larger first class. And then you have a much greater chance of getting upgraded. But even if you don't, it's so much more pleasurable, at least to me, to be on a wide body plane. And because there's so much more space, usually, especially if you can get the bulkhead or the exit row. But again, it takes time. But, you know, look at the different planes before you book.
Do you use SeatGuru? What do you use to check the seating?
Well, for the seating, I'll go right directly to the website and see what they're doing.
Because they'll have some.
And then once I find a type of plane, then I'll go to SeatGuru and find out what's the best coach seat or by chance I'm getting upgraded business class seat. And they'll tell you, because they'll tell you, you know, there's no window in this aisle. You know, a lot of people go, oh, my God, I had no window.
Right. Or, that's a bummer.
You know, there's no plugs, and you know to bring a power port or whatever you need.
Plan ahead. You're going to be spending hours on that thing, sometimes many hours. Johnny Jett, he's on the Rhine. Traveling from Basel, Switzerland, to where do you end?
I'm going to end in Amsterdam. I'll be there in a few days.
You're going all the way up to Amsterdam. How nice! We'll have a wonderful trip. Go get dinner.
I'm going back. Johnny, I'm going to get dessert. I had dinner.
Go get dessert. JohnnyJett.com. Right. You can follow him on the website. He's got a great travel newsletter. He also is a regular tweeter and Instagrammer. In both cases, Johnny Jett is the handle. JohnnyJett. J-E-T, and you must follow.
One T, I'm not related to Joan.
It's like jet, like airplane, right? No relation to
that's
Joan.
Right.
It used to be Johnny Jet Ski, but that's another story for another day. Thank you, John.
Take care.
Safe
have a great
travels.
Week.
All right. Thanks. I tell you what, I love river cruises, but you do have to be prepared. They're slow. They're relaxed. There's not a lot of stuff going on, but, man, you see some beautiful sights. And the Rhine is, I think that's probably the king of the river cruises, isn't it? With all those castles. How fun. All the beer. All the Rhine wine. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. We also have a website, techilabs.com. Everything we mentioned, everything Johnny mentions will be there on the website. Let me see if I can begin a call. I don't think I can get through it in the minute I have before we have to take a break. But Eric is on the line from San Dimas, California, and I'd hate to keep him waiting any longer. Hi, Eric.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome. What can I do for you?
Hey, real quick question because you got a minute. Our company switched over to Surface Pro 4s. I like to use an external monitor. I had a 780 dp, and then I went up to a 1080 dp for the clarity, mm-hmm. and that still didn't work real well. So I went up to the 4K Seiko Chinese brand.
Nice.
And it's really clear, but I'm noticing that with the mouse, when I go to a certain icon or anywhere on the screen, it drags or drifts. It takes a longer time for that mouse point to get to the icon or to the spot that I want it.
Well, it's going over a lot more dots. What I would do is get into the mouse settings and turn up the sensitivity. There's also something called acceleration. That means as you move it, the more you move it, the faster it goes, and it really helps in cases like that. Trackpad or mouse, you'll find them in the control panel, and just turn up sensitivity and mostly turn up acceleration. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sounds so dramatic, doesn't it? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Christine in Albany, you're next. Hi, Christine. Thanks for hanging on. Hello, Kristen.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm a big Twit fan, so can't believe it's taken me this long to give you a call. But I have a call. I have a question about a home printer. I work from home a couple days a week. My printer just died. I need to be able to print, scan, mostly black and white, some color, and not too photo intense, mostly documents that I scan and need to email. So, and also, you know, the ink, I know, sometimes can be pretty expensive. So I'm wondering if you have...
Did Epson tell you to call?
No.
You know, our sponsor, Epson.
Of course.
Yeah. And, of course, they're the ones that are doing the EcoTank printers with the inexpensive ink and They have all-in-one scanner printers that do
one
nice
other
color.
Thing I need.
Oh, good. I hope it's something that Epson doesn't do. Otherwise, I'm going to sound like a shill.
Needs to be compact. Needs to be a smaller, not a big, huge thing. I have a small house.
Yeah. So all-in-ones tend to be a little bigger, right? Because they have to have a scanner, and they have a printer, and they got and big pay. And then a lot of times people say, oh, it's an all-in-one. It's going to be for a small office or a home office, so I need to have a big paper reservoir, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. It's like a little copy machine. The Epson EcoTank 4550 is not too big, but it's not exactly compact either. I mean, I don't know how small is small. I mean, it has to be big enough to print a 8.5 by 11 sheet. Yeah. the thing about the EcoTanks is they add to the size of the printer because they kind of stick out over the edge a little bit. On the other hand, I don't, you know, it's not a huge thing. I would take a look at them anyway. They're really, I mean, okay, disclaimer, yes, they buy ads on my show, and I'm a fan. I've been using them for years. I have two at home. But I do think they're very good printers. Any all-in-one which does scanning and printing, they do make a smaller Artisan model that I think does scanning. I'm trying to remember if the Artisan.
Yeah, I was looking at that a while ago.
I love those Epsons. I'm going to, just for objectivity's sake, there are other companies in the world. Canon makes, I think, very good printers. You said you don't care about photo printing so much.
Not so much. So I'm just looking if you have a model. And you know, when I go on Amazon, I go online, and you do search, so many things come up, and it's just too overwhelming for me.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure they're excellent printers from Lexmark and Brother and HP, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I pretty much stick with Canon or Epson. In fact, I haven't used anything but Epson in about 5 years. I have, you know, the thing is, the one thing that Epson does do, because the EcoTanks come with 2 years of ink, they charge you up front for the ink. So those are not the $90 printers where they make it up in ink cartridges. Right, those are more expensive because you're paying for the ink. But you'll see that it's still, if you do the math, it's 50 cartridges worth. It's still a lot less than 50 cartridges would cost. So I still would take a look at the 4550. Get them. You know, if you go on Amazon, you can get the dimensions. Sometimes I'll do this. We'll cut a piece of cardboard out that size, and we'll see. Well, can I fit it here? My wife has it sitting in, you know, next to her computer on just a little side table. It fits it fine. It doesn't seem too overwhelming. How often do you print?
Well, I work from home a couple of days a week.
You want a decent printer. Yeah.
But that's good. Thanks for the recommendation. Yeah. Again, want to say I love Twit Podcast. I have been a fan for, I don't know how long now. I don't know how I even found you, but I found you.
Yay.
Love all your hosts. I love Megan, by the way.
I do, too. I worked with her for years. She was a co-host with me on the Screensavers on Tech TV in the 90s and early 2000s, and was really glad we could hire her. We should explain, she's not calling me a twit, folks. It's the name of our network, which stands it's just a happy coincidence. It stands for This Week in Tech. That's the podcast network, but it's twit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have to explain that all the time because I have a lot of your t-shirts and sweatshirts.
Imagine how our sales team feels. I'm calling from Twit. Okay, nice to hear from you. Thank you. Hey, it's great to talk to you. Thanks for the kind words, Christine. I really appreciate it. Very, very kind. I mean, it's so funny because when a company buys advertising, in some ways, it makes it harder for me to recommend them because I don't want to sound like I'm a shill for them. So all I can say is a disclaimer, even though, yes, they buy advertising, I've been recommending Epson for years and buying Epson for years. And as far as I'm concerned, they're the best ones out there, whether they gave me money to say that or not. They didn't give me money to say that. That I did for free. If you're getting a laser printer, there are other companies. You know, Brother makes some very inexpensive laser printers. And if you don't need photo printing at all, a laser might be a good choice. Color on lasers tends to be a little less brilliant, a little more washed out. They're fantastic for black and white. They set the standard for black and white. And usually the cost per page, sometimes we call that the cost of consumables, paper and ink, tends to be lower on laser. But the cost up front usually is higher. So, you know, it kind of all evens out. Fran in Mount Pleasant, Texas. Hi, Fran.
Hey, hi, Leo.
Hey, hi.
Thank you.
Nice to talk to
First
you.
First time caller, long time viewer.
Welcome. Thanks. Welcome. Nice to have you.
Good. I'm having a problem with my Toshiba Satellite L855D. It's a Windows 8 machine, 3 years old, and it won't support Windows 10. Toshiba
well,
will not support it.
Yeah, there's nothing much you can do about that. That means they didn't. There's hardware on there that they didn't make a Windows 10 compatible driver for.
Exactly. I've searched everywhere. I've gone to old drivers. I've tried every.
It's not old driver. You need a new driver, and yeah, that is a problem. And a lot of times with older hardware. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there any way to get Microsoft to stop sending the nags?
You don't. Okay, so, yes, I'm so glad you brought this up. First of all, there's lots of good reasons people don't want to or can't upgrade. And you know what? It's okay to say, I don't want to upgrade. I like Windows 7 or I like Windows 8. I want to stay there. None of your business. It's your computer. Now, I have to tell you, if they're offering you the upgrade, Microsoft thinks it is compatible.
Yeah, that's why I'm confused.
Well, they know. So if Microsoft, you know, if Microsoft says it's compatible, it means we have drivers for all the hardware. And what I would do is you could just do the upgrade, and if it doesn't work, there in the upgrade, there's a rollback to your old operating system. You have 30 days
right.
to do that.
I have downloaded it. I keep on getting the blue screen of death.
Oh, then you don't want it. So this is.
I can't. It won't support
yeah,
it.
Yeah. No. You're right. Dying. And Microsoft's wrong in this case. And by the way, at some point they're going to actually do it, whether you like it or not. So what you want is something called, and it's free, the GWX control panel. We'll put it in the show notes at techguylabs.com. The GWX control panel will get rid of that horrible ad. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm not a planner. I'm spontaneous. That's how I like to think of it. Last minute Leo, that's what Lisa says. But, you know, I find out someone's coming to town. There's a show I want to see. I oftentimes say, well, can I get tickets? And that's when I go to Score Big. Do you know about Score Big? Score Big is awesome. Whether it's a Warriors game, Heart concert, they must know my patterns here. Or you want to see Hamilton the musical? I put all three on ScoreBig. ScoreBig, and here's a nice thing about ScoreBig: you can pay less for better seats because this was the thing that blew me away. 40% of all live tickets go unsold. Now, when a concert's not selling out, the company doing the show doesn't want to announce, hey, we got extra tickets. They're not selling. You want a deal? So what do? They go to ScoreBig, and they sell them through ScoreBig. So you're going to be working directly with your favorite teams, your artists, to get their unsold seats at unpublished prices. At ScoreBig.com, you're always guaranteed huge savings by paying much less than what the box office actually charges for tickets. That is nice. Incredible deals on tickets to concerts, sports events, Broadway productions, family-friendly events. Visit scorebig.com. Find the events and the seats you want, and then you make an offer with their Name the Ticket feature. You'll get an answer instantly and save up to 60% on your tickets. You can also buy it, buy it right now at a fixed price. It's still much less expensive than the major online ticket resellers. With ScoreBig, now I shouldn't go to this site because then I see things I want to go see. With ScoreBig, there are no surprise fees. Now, this is one other thing. If you're doing ticket price comparisons, ScoreBig, when you buy tickets, that's it. That's the fee. There's no add-on at the end. And a lot of other guys, it seems like the price is low, and then you get to the end, they go, and by the way, your service fee of $500. There are no surprise fees. Free shipping. You can even favorite shows and events and get notified on upcoming events. So I love that. I mean, if I say, hey, I don't know when Heart's coming to town, but make sure you let me know. Oh, they're coming. Oh, Shoreline Amphitheater. We already got our tickets, by the way. And what's great is you can, if there are unsold seats, you're going to get them in a great deal. So stop overpaying for tickets. Get the tickets you want at prices you can afford with Score Big. First place I check every time. Next time you're going to a game or show, or you just want to know what's in town, visit Score Big first. See how much you can save. Go to scorebig.com. By the way, while you're there, click on this red tab, heard us on the TV or radio, and use our promo code TECHGUY, and they're going to give you an extra $20 off your first purchase. TECHGUY, all one word. Save an extra $20 at scorebig.com. Don't forget the promo code TECHGUY. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Website is techguylabs.com. Our last caller, kind of the last hour, illustrated the whole problem that's going on right now with Windows 10. And it's just kind of shocking. Microsoft really wants, look, let's be honest, Microsoft wants everybody to be running Windows 10, and there's good reason for that. You have one operating system, it's easier to keep people secure, up to date. A lot of people running XP still, that's so old that it's not even, you know, being secured anymore. There's, you know, and by the way, running an insecure operating system isn't just bad for you, it's bad for the internet, it's bad for everybody. Insecure operating systems are often used by hackers to attack other systems. So if you have an insecure operating system, an older operating system, you haven't kept it up to date, the bad guy gets into it without your knowledge, which happens all the time, he can then use you to bring other sites down or to send spam, to do all sorts of stuff. You don't want to be party to that. So Microsoft's really pushing it. They're pushing it for other reasons, for economic reasons, obviously. Not that they make money on Windows 10. They're giving it away for anybody running Windows 7 or 8.1. Not for businesses, but businesses have volume licenses. They're paying those on an ongoing basis. They get the upgrades as part of that anyway. But for home users, for personal users, it's free. So it's not about that. It's about developers. It's about getting developers on board. And if they can say, look, you know, 80% of our audience now is using a single operating system. See, they look over at Apple, and that's how it is with Apple. People have been getting free upgrades every year for years. Apple users tend to upgrade their Macintoshes kind of automatically. Microsoft wants to be in that boat. They don't like being in a situation where they have a lot of older operating systems to support. That costs money. It's a security hazard. And developers don't like it because they don't know what they're developing for. They don't know what the software is going to run on. There's even this new Universal Windows platform that'll make it easy for developers to write a program that runs on Windows, Windows Phone. Well, they don't care about that, but maybe Xbox, you know, so they're hoping they can get this whole thing jump started. That's why starting on July 29th of last year, they started giving it away. And starting a few months after that, they started popping up that little ad. You've probably seen it if you're running Windows 7 or 8.1. It's saying, hey, your machine's ready for Windows 10. Would you like to reserve a copy? And no, go away. And you can't get rid of it. In fact, even if you uninstall it, it reinstalls itself with software with updates. It's kind of annoying. In fact, they just updated Internet Explorer to put a big green banner on it when you create a new tab or first open it, saying, hey, you want to upgrade to Windows 10? Come on. But now here's the worst news. Starting last month, they started making Windows 10 a recommended update in the Windows Update feature. And for most people, the default setting in Windows is install all critical updates, and that's a good setting because that's all the security updates, and recommended updates. The problem is, if you've got that turned on, you're going to wake up one morning, and Windows 10 will have been installed, and you'll get the box that says, do you agree to the user agreement? It's too late. You could say no, and then it has to go through the uninstall, which is often problematic. What? That's not okay. It's really not okay. Now, one thing you can do right now to prevent that from happening is go into your system updates and say, do not only do critical updates automatically. Do not do recommended updates. Recommended updates are not security fixes. They're things like new language packs, new drivers sometimes. You should be able to look at those and say, I want them, I don't want them, check a box, and then update them. You don't need to have those go automatically. So turn off the automatic updates. If you don't want to see the pop-up, Microsoft has a really convoluted and bad solution which involves editing the registry. Don't do that. There's a free tool which is usable, is kept up to date, and as long as he keeps keeping it up to date, because, you know, Microsoft keeps changing how they do this, it will continue to be a useful way to fight this annoying advertising. It's called GWX Control Panel. And, you know, it comes from the Ultimate Outsider website, ultimateoutsider.com. Don't worry, we've vetted it. We've looked at it. It's safe to use. Steve Gibson, my security guru, recommends it. Ultimate Outsider, you'll know you're in the right place because it's kind of got a lemon yellow page. And the slogan is nothing but win. Current version updated last January 24th, 1.7.2. And it's safe to use. And that will turn off that annoying ad. But in my opinion, this is unacceptable behavior on Microsoft's part. I understand why they want to move everybody to Windows 10, but there's good reason. Like our last caller, it crashes her system. It blue screens. Her system's not compatible. It's an older Toshiba. And even though Microsoft thinks it's compatible, it's not. So she has every reason to turn down that update. A lot of people run software that won't run on Windows 10, or they just don't like it. You know, it's okay. It's your computer. You can run. You paid for the computer. You paid for the operating system. If you want to stay with it, you do not have to update. You shouldn't have to update. And Microsoft's strong arm tactics are totally unacceptable. Totally unacceptable. So there we have it. I'm really kind of almost shocked that they're doing this, to be honest. It doesn't seem like good corporate behavior. And it's causing a lot of pain in users. Now, I should say, I like Windows 10. I use Windows 10. I don't have any problem with it. I'm using up-to-date hardware, modern hardware that works with Windows 10. But I was so incensed by this that my older Windows stuff, I moved over to Linux. I said, well, if you're going to be that way, I'm just not going to use Windows on this older stuff. I don't want to see that ad anymore. It's kind of shocking that they would think this is okay, to be honest. My first reaction when we heard about this last week, that people were getting updated automatically, was no, that's got to be a bug. I understand the pop-up, I understand the ad, I understand recommending it, but there's no way it installs unless you say install it. Microsoft says, no, it's not a bug. That's how we wanted it to be. We warned you, we told you. Wow. I don't know what to say. Don't use Windows unless you have to, I guess. And if you're using Windows and you have to use Windows, get GWX Control Panel. Unless you want to go to Windows 10. But no, that's not how this works. It's my computer. I should get to decide, not Microsoft. 8888-ASK. Leo, you agree? You disagree? Let's hear from you. Naomi is in Denver, our next caller. Hi, Naomi.
Oh, me, Leo Laporte, you're my only hope.
Oh, no, what's the matter?
Well, I've been helping this widowed lady since about 2012 when they first came out with the Chromebook.
Yes.
And I have suggested it to her. She was asking me about some things. And
great choice for people. A lot of people just surf the internet, do email, do basic stuff. A Chromebook is such a good idea.
Well, her son came to visit that summer and said, yes, that's the way to go.
Good.
And he took out her XP that had been limping along for a long time.
Yeah.
And she got onto Facebook and
good.
She did, you know, genealogy. And she was just as happy as a little lark and doing a lot of Picasso with old photos.
Perfect.
And she had her scanner and everything, and I was amazed that it can hook up to a scanner.
Oh, yeah.
And anyway, because her deceased husband was in law enforcement, she had a pseudo name.
Okay, hang on. I understand. Hang on. We're going to have to take a break. We have to take a break. Hang on. We'll continue. Hold your thought. Continue when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking to Naomi in Denver. Naomi has a friend who's using a Chromebook. This is something I recommend to a lot of people. Chromebooks are based on Linux. They come from Google. Really, if you want to know what it's like to use a Chromebook, just say, I'm only going to use Google Chrome, the Chrome browser. Anything you could do with Google Chrome, you can do with a Chromebook and nothing else. It's more secure. It's more reliable. It's a lot less expensive. And for 90% of people out there, I think it does everything you need a computer to do. We kind of, for years, we've been sold this bill of goods that you need a general purpose computer. But unless you're writing software or designing rocket ships or editing video, you don't. For what most people use tech computers for, a Chromebook is fantastic. Highly recommended. Now, you said that she doesn't use her real name on the internet.
Yeah, because her...
That's fine, but for whatever reason. But she does have a Google account in this pseudonym.
Correct.
And that's what she's using on the Chromebook.
And she has a Gmail account in the pseudonym. Well, good. Facebook decided to kick her off.
Right, right. Facebook doesn't like that.
So she can't, because she has a very distinctive last name, and her husband was her.
I understand. I understand. This is there's a pro and the con over the real names policy. On the pro side, when people are using their real name, they behave, and you can see the difference between Facebook and Twitter. Twitter, you can use any name you want. Nobody uses their real name, and it's really anonymous. And so, as a result, there's a lot of drive-by, you know, libel and slander on Twitter. On Facebook, it's a little bit more orderly. But the problem with a real names policy is it's hard to enforce. For instance, how do they know what's your real name? Until somebody turned her in, she was able to use it. But somebody complained. Does her phony name sound like a phony name?
Well, yeah, kind of, but...
Well, so she should make a phony name that doesn't sound like a phony name. Because they only act if somebody complains.
Really?
Yeah, and then they've done what they've done to her, which is, well, I need to see some ID, in effect. You have to send them a picture of your government ID, of your driver's license or something like that. But you can join. Go ahead and have her join. You can join Facebook as long as it doesn't look like a phony name and no one complains. And that's the key. If you're calling yourself Daffy Duck, pretty quickly Facebook's going to say, hey, prove that's your real name. Well, I have a friend who's very well known as a magazine publisher. His real name is Ken Goffey, but I've never known him by that name. He was known as Are You Serious? For years, as he published Mondo 2000, very well known in the tech community as Are You Serious? Nobody knows his real name. Facebook won't let him use Are You Serious? Because they say it's a pseudonym. And that's the disadvantage of a real names policy. And there are lots of other reasons you could think of that people would want to use a phony name in public.
Yeah, she's so depressed, I can't even get to tell her that CASA is ending on the 27th.
Oh, don't tell her that either. But tell her she will love the new Google Photos, which does the same thing. I mean, they've migrated people to Google Photos.
She won't even smile when I go, oh, good morning, young lady.
Oh. Really? That makes me smile.
Everybody.
It may also be delayed grief over her husband and things like that, you know. And,
oh, it's bad. And so... I don't know. Is there
so
anything
tell her she
can do?
No, they don't allow phony names. You know, they do. You know, there are some exceptions. People who are going through a gender transition sometimes are allowed to use their preferred transgender name, things like that. She could appeal it to their. It's a pain, though. She doesn't want to do this, but she can appeal it to them and say, here's the reason why I don't use this name. I don't think they'll allow it. They really want people to use real names. They know that there's fallout to that there's definitely negative consequences of doing this, but they feel that the positive consequences outweigh the negative consequences. Here's the thing. You can create a Facebook...
Who turned her in?
Well, that's one negative consequence. What kind of jerk does that? She can't find that out. So, but she can make a new account and make it sound like a real name. And again, she's just going to have to hope that nobody figures it out and turns her in. So if she's got somebody's out to get her, then they may try to find her and they may turn her in. She may not get to use Facebook, which is sad.
Yeah, because she's good. She does a lot of genealogy and things. And
a lot of people use fake names. This is the funny part. Millions of people use fake names on Facebook. They just haven't been caught. Nobody's complained.
And there's nothing else we can do.
This is their policy. It's their private company. They can run it any way they want.
It's their ball, huh?
It's their ball. It's important to remember that, by the way. I think a lot of people assume, well, one common assumption is this free speech argument. No, there's free speech in the United States. No, there's not. The First Amendment only means the government can't do anything to abridge your speech, or can only do limited things to abridge your speech. But any private company can decide whatever its policy is and enforce it, period. Facebook. It's a private company. If they could just say, we don't like your face, we're not going to let you in, and there's nothing anybody could do about it.
But we can't find her turned her in.
Oh, of course they're not going to tell you that.
Well,
they don't want to create like this.
Online,
this.
And they said it's a robot that goes through.
Well, it may be, but I don't know how. Does it really look? I mean, like I said, if you name Daffy Duck, the robot will catch you.
Well, she's been trying to respond to it, and all it comes back is Jesse. And she keeps saying, well, dear Jesse, this is my situation, and da 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 da. We are trying to find your identity. It's just formless.
They will require her to give them, if they haven't already, proof of identity in a picture of a government identity card, like a driver's license. Now, if she wants to have a name of her own, make up one that doesn't sound phony, and she probably won't get caught. You know, it'd be better for her. Does she use it? Does she post content or just look at other people's content?
She's just doing it with family and some of her genealogy stuff.
Well, that's the other thing. Help her make it a private account. Nobody will complain if she doesn't have any public posts. Nobody will even know. Unless her family turned her in, I don't doubt that.
No.
Yeah, so don't publish publicly at all. Mm-hmm. Only publish, you know, privately to your friends, the people you've friended on Facebook. Much less likely that anybody would turn her in then.
Oh, well, thank you, Leo.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say.
Create an identity that looks real. Use her maiden name. You know what? Her maiden name is allowed, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to be an answer or not.
She may not like it, but Facebook would allow her to use her maiden name. I'm sure of that, because that's her legal name before marriage. I think she could defend that one. If you call yourself Hulk Hogan, a little harder. Although they have made exceptions in the case of movie stars and celebrities, it's not evenly enforced, alas. I'm sorry. Please give her my love and a big hug. And do that funny voice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. A lot of kids, high school and college kids, don't use their real names on Facebook because they want to post pictures of them partying and things like that, and then they know that's something they won't want to follow them forever, so they use a phony name, and then they get when they get out of college, they use their real name, and that's now going to be their Facebook account. This is very common. Yeah, I think it's interesting. Look, any company can run its business the way it wants to, and so I think a lot of times people feel like social networks are kind of like public utilities. You know, Twitter should be compelled to run it however we want Twitter to be run. And Facebook should be, but they're not. They're private companies. So Facebook has rules. They've had rules to their credit since the very beginning that you have to use your real name. Twitter has no such rule. Anybody can create an account. Many people, I have multiple accounts on Twitter. I have my real name, but I also have, you know, a bot account that, you know, kind of on an automated way publishes, you know, new shows and things. I have an account for my dog. And that's not unusual. That's kind of what's fun about Twitter. And that's just the difference between Twitter and Facebook. I have to say, Twitter is a cesspool in many respects because people don't have to use their real name. It's laden with harassment It's been a place. Well, this is the interesting thing. It's been a place where people who want to harass, like the Gamergate crowd, can issue death threats with impunity because they're anonymous. But at the same time, that anonymity protects protesters during the Arab Spring in Egypt and in the Middle East, and allowed them to use Twitter to great effect to overthrow a tyrannical regime. So there's benefits to – there is value to anonymity. There's also negative side effects. Twitter is a cesspool as a result, and you have to kind of wade in there, wade in carefully. Facebook, on the other hand, less useful for revolution, although it has been used for revolution. In fact, very famously, one of the Egyptian protesters in the Arab Spring named his son Facebook. Or was it, maybe it was in Turkey, I can't remember which country, but named his son Facebook because Facebook was so instrumental in helping them express themselves freely. Imagine that kid when he gets his Facebook account. No, my name is Facebook. No, it's not. Yes, it is. but he'll have, a driver's license, so he can prove it. I think there are merits and disadvantages to both ways of doing things. Google Plus, when Google started its social network, Google insisted on using real names and then abandoned it, realizing it was such a hard thing to enforce. And there were so many good reasons not to enforce it. In a way, they got the best of both worlds because there's a culture of real names on Google Plus, but people were allowed to make up names after a while. Wasn't enough to save Google Plus as a social network, but there you go. John's next in Indianapolis, Indiana. Hello, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call today. First, I wanted to say thank you so much. I work as a TV meteorologist and have done weekends for the last 16 years, and it's been great being able to listen to you every weekend when I'm sitting in here at work working on a forecast.
Thank you. What channel are you on?
I work for the CBS affiliate, CBS 4 here in Indy.
We'll start watching every weekend. Everybody, John, give me a little. It's going to be a nice weekend in Indy this weekend.
Well, we've got cloudy skies, or mostly cloudy skies tomorrow morning. We'll top out around 45 with some sunshine breaking up by late afternoon. But back in the 70s by middle of the week.
Yeah, he's a weatherman. You don't need an ID to prove that.
And I heard you mentioning about New York. I looked up the forecast for you for New York.
Are we going to have some snow in New York on Tuesday?
Not Tuesday. They may have a little bit on Monday.
Oh, okay.
It looks like maybe a few showers, maybe Wednesday night.
Okay. We're going to be there Tuesday through Friday because we want to do a little spring break action in New York. I hear it's a great. It's where all the kids go for spring break. Maybe not. How do we know yet? What Memorial Day is going to look like in Indy?
Oh, that's way
too far ahead, huh?
That is the toughest forecast, and nobody wants to touch it that far out.
And that's the one, though, isn't it?
That is the forecast I have to put together, and you do not want to get that one wrong. And this year is the 100th running of the Indy 500.
Is it really?
You really don't want to mess that up.
Oh, I was there a few years ago for the parade. It was so fun. It's such a great town. Indy is great during that Memorial Day weekend. Well, John, what can I do for you?
Well, I want to set up a couple of webcams. I've got a couple of network cameras I've purchased, and I want to set them up around my property. But we want to be able to use them on the air. We've got multiple computers that may be accessing them at any time. My internet stream at home, or at least my connection.
Yeah, you don't want to
have multiple.
If you're going to use them on the air and give out the address, you definitely don't want to be hosting them at home.
But well, and the question is, if I've got one camera, and I want to have two computers within our weather computers accessing them.
Yeah.
But I don't want to have multiple streams coming out of that one computer, that one camera. Is there a way to do that, or is there some kind of service you
can
point me to?
Yeah. We used to just when we did the screensavers, we had an Axis Cam, AXIS. It was an early web-enabled smart camera, but it can only allow 8 people at any given time. And of course, when we gave out the address, that was it. No, we were never able to use it again because there's always more than 8 people trying to use it. So this is clearly not the way to go if you're giving it out on the air.
Well, and this is something this would be a private IP address, things like that, where it's going into our weather computer. Nobody's going to actually see, except for here within the station. But I'm just trying to find out. I don't have the upload speed to be able to handle 2 or 3 computers accessing an HD stream.
See, that's...
I'm just wondering, is there a way to put one stream out of my camera?
I see. That is all of them.
Computers.
Yeah, I see what you're asking now. So it's not going to be a public stream, but you just don't have enough bandwidth to serve multiple cameras. simultaneously. What you want is something that'll switch from camera to camera, probably, right?
That or allow a computer on the at the TV station side or
to switch
can access the one stream at the same time.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it would be a transcoder that we would need to.
Yeah, you know. So I was going to recommend now that I understand that this is not a good solution. We use the Nest cams. They used to be called drop cams, and the nice thing about those is that the host site is drop cam, not you. So you stream to drop cam, and then when you're looking at the stream, you're looking at it on drop cam. That doesn't solve your problem, though. In fact, it wasn't good for us because we had, I don't know, 6 or 7 high-def streams, each of them using a megabit or more, going up. It was jamming our upstream bandwidth. So this is exactly the problem you would have with multiple cameras. Mm-hmm. You don't want them all streaming at the same time. You want to switch around. I am not sure. This is one we're going to throw to the chat room. A security camera system that would allow the remote user to turn on, to check a camera, and it wouldn't use bandwidth until that time.
Or Leo, it could even just be one camera, but we just need to be able to have 2 computers or maybe even 3 access that live stream at any moment.
Well, that would, drop cam would solve that. As long as you had one camera and you had enough bandwidth for that one camera to send a signal up, it sends it to drop cam site where it's then served and can be served to multiple computers.
Okay, because I found a network camera. It's called Hikvision. And it's actually a relatively good price. It was about $180 for a 4-megapixel. It's already weatherproofed and everything else. And the camera stream looks great, but again, it's fine if we're just using one computer
right.
to access
but
it.
What you want is, and then normally you might not want this, but what you want is a camera that will send the video to a centralized site with more bandwidth that's the site that you hit from the TV station.
Right, right.
And Nest Cam will do that. I don't know if this Hikvision will do that, but that's what you're looking for. And the reason Drop Cam does that is because they want to provide as a service recordings. And so if you were going to do that at home, you'd have to have a computer always on, recording constantly. A lot of times people use DVRs to do that. That's what we use here. We use a network-attached storage that has DVR capabilities to record all the cameras simultaneously. But with DropCam, it just uploads it to the DropCam site, and you can actually scrub back and forth in that video and pick a little pretty part of it. And you're getting the video not from your camera, but from DropCam. And by the way, it's called NestCam now. They've rebranded it.
Well, let me ask you one additional question with that then. The stream that
Hold on. I got to take a break. But And one more thing. Somebody's suggesting with if you had a Nest Cam, F and Dunn, my producer, is saying you can feed that to Ustream, which would really have capacity then. You could tell everybody watching your show, hey, go to Ustream if you want to see my backyard. But hang on. We'll finish the call in a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Unity is our sponsor for this portion of the Tech Guy podcast. It's a free, but these guys are free. It's a free personal media server, and it's so cool because you install it on your devices, on your computer, and then you can stream your music collection to every mobile device, even iTunes, your movie collection. Actually, John uses Unity. He's got Unity at home. We can log on to his computer and watch his movies. Share any of your media with your friends, peer-to-peer. Your friends can stream it directly from your computer. You can install Unity on every computer you want to access. That's the nice thing. If you have multiple collections on different computers, Unity will unify all the data into one organized menu in your Unity app. Let me show you. Y-O-U. U, like that. N-I-T-Y. Y-O-U. N-I-T-Y. If you go to getunity.com/techguy, you can download the software and install it. And then, of course, they have an app for all, you know, iPhones and Android devices. It will merge multiple iTunes accounts and libraries into one, which is really sweet. You can access all your Lightroom or Apple Photos libraries and photo albums. You can post photos stored on your computers directly to Instagram. You can stream and share GoPro videos. You can even AirPlay. Yeah, so you can AirPlay, stream your music or your video to your TV from your mobile device. It's very cool. It works great. And it's completely secure and private. Your own private personal media server. GetUnity.com/TechGuy. GetYounity.com/TechGuy. GetUnity.com/TechGuy. It's free. Yeah. Getunity.com/techguy. We thank them so much for their support. Very easy to use. Really a really great idea. Stream access, share all the video, all the audio, all the pictures. It's what everybody needs. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Dick DiBartolo, Mads Maddest Writer, is going to join us in just a second for our GizWiz segment. He's our gadget guru. But before we do that, let me wrap things up with our weatherman, John, from, what is it, CBS 4? Is that what you said?
Yeah, CBS 4 in Indianapolis.
In beautiful Indianapolis. He's the weekend weather guy. You could see him tonight. Nobody's come up with an answer for you.
Well, and let me throw one more caveat out to you. Hopefully it would be a weatherproofed camera,
yeah,
and ideally would have a MPEG-4 or an H.264 direct stream, or that we could tie into. Our weather computers won't take just any flash video player to pull in. Sorry.
Well, that's the beauty. I don't know if this is flash. Let me look. I bet it is flash on the Nest cams. No, you know what? It's Google company. It won't be flash anymore. It'll be video, HTML5 style video you could play on your browser. I think Nest Cam is probably your best bet.
Okay.
I would certainly take a look at that. And you know what? I'll keep listening. If I can find a solution, I will either put it on the show notes or... your cameras are all down. I was going to show... Dick DiBartolo has Disneyland cameras of his studio on a drop can. They all seem to be down. Dick, you got to... Oh, wait a minute. Here it is. Okay, there we go. So you've got three cameras in your studio, right?
I have two on the boat and one in the studio.
Yeah.
There we go.
You're That's able to stream that, yeah. And people can look at this. And I'm looking at it on the site, so thousands of people can go to the site and look at you. This is the drop cam. I think this works pretty well.
I'll take a look at that.
And I do think
a wide shot.
Yeah, I think they have weatherproof now. They have very good quality. They've gotten better and better in the quality, but not quite as good as the view I have right here in the studio of Dick DiBartolo, Mads Maddest Writer, and our GizWiz. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing, pal?
I am very well.
Good.
Snow, huh?
Yeah, it's not going to be. I was looking at the weather, and the coldest it's going to be is 32 for about 4 hours. Oh,
it's one of those where snow comes and it melts immediately.
It's gonna be gone. When are you coming? Tuesday?
Yeah, we fly in midnight. We get there midnight Tuesday, and we stay Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Yeah,
I don't think you're going to have any problem at all.
You know, when I see this angle,
I will personally come out.
When I see this drop cam angle of your studio, it's a mess.
Well, it is.
This is the beauty of television. the camera that you have in front of you is very constrained. We only see the tidy stuff. It's like me.
Yes.
If you could see the rest of the studio, it's like Fibber McGee's closet. It's about to fall on my head.
Exactly. And also, tomorrow night, I'm doing Gadgets from the Houseware show. So I have boxes everywhere. So normally, it's not quite this.
You're going to do that on ABC's World News Now?
World News Now, exactly.
Nice. Well, what did you... So do you
have a gadget? I have a gadget that's good to demonstrate on radio.
Oh, good. We
need
that.
Very few like that. Yeah. So you go to ball games a lot.
I do.
And
love them.
How do you cheer your team on? Do you... You don't bring one of those boat horns, do you?
No, those are mean. I have something that is really kind of much more appropriate. A vuvuzela.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that'll clear the stands.
They don't let me in anymore.
Oh.
Here comes Laporte with his vuvuzela. Get rid of that.
All right, well then.
So you have a better solution?
I do. Okay, do you know about fan hands?
Fan hands. Is that the big number one foam finger?
No. So instead of clapping with your regular hands...
Yeah.
With fan hands.
Wait a minute. What are these giant plastic? Oh, they got like taps on them.
Yes.
Gloves
with taps and different levels of plastic so that without doing, I'm just mildly clapping. And
I bet if 1,000 people had those, it would sound like 10,000, right?
Yeah. They are very loud. So. You know, they're $12 on Amazon. They come in many colors.
I need these for the next ball game. Yep.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. There you go. You should have a dozen pair at the studio. So when you have an audience in, you can say, if you don't mind, could you just wear these?
Yeah, just light applause sounds like a...
Yes.
So, and I'm sure that these are legal in the stadiums. There's no way they're going to keep... They look like gloves.
They look like gloves, exactly. I can't imagine that anybody's going to say anything. They're breathable polyester fabric, and they have these clacky things on them that just, I mean, this is just touching them together. They just
all right. So let's see. This is what it would be like to go to a ball game
with you
Leo,
and I.
With Leo and Dick. Go team!
Yay!
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. Are you bringing that to Hamilton?
Yeah. That's okay, right? You can.
Oh, yeah. They encourage that.
Broadway
kind of
doesn't
thing.
Mind vuvuzelas.
No, they. Lin-Manuel, tell him that Dickie said it was okay.
I will. I'll say, hey, Dick DiBartolo said I should bring my fan hands and vuvuzela.
There you go.
Fanhands.com, by the way.
Yes.
$12. And they have them in black, dark green, Kelly green, maroon. You can get the color to match your particular team.
Your team. Exactly. There you go.
I am not giving these to our teenager. It would be very annoying.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, Dick DiBartolo website, gizwiz.biz, gizwiz.biz. You can play the What the Heck Is It contest. Chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. He's going to be on World News Now tomorrow night.
Yep.
And, of course, don't forget his own podcast, the Giz Whiz podcast at gizwiz.tv. You must watch.
Thank you.
And, Dick, we will see you next week.
I'll be here.
Hey, thanks to our new our musical production at Wizard, our conductor, Nathan Staten, musical director. He plays the discs for us and keeps us enlivened and enlightened throughout the show. Of course, to my good friend Heather Hammon, the phone ranger, who has... doing such a great job. Thanks to Dick DiBartolo, who has some special antennas on his on his head. We thank all of you for joining us. I promise if you come back next time, I will make you this solemn pledge. I will not play the vuvuzela. I will never do that to you again. This one, though, this is fun. A listener brought this to me. It was at the World Cup in South Africa. This is the one that was annoying everybody at the official annoying vuvuzela of the World Cup. And what was that? It was two World Cups ago, right? In South Africa. Don't forget the website, techguylabs.com. If you go there, you can find everything you need, everything I've mentioned on the show, links to the chat room, the phone number, everything, including our pick of the week and our tip of the week. And by the way, that's free. That's yours for free. All you got to do is go to techguylabs.com. There's no charge. There's no sign up. I kind of like it that way. We could just thank our nice sponsors for making that possible. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Take care of your data and have a great geek week. We'll see you next time. Oh, I can hear the clicking. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security and Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today and Tech News Tonight. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.